Okay, hello. Welcome to episode 277 of Sack Kings Therapy. I am coming to you solo today because Fong could not watch this game. It's just too early for him. He doesn't get off work early enough to be able to watch this game. So I will cover the game solo today. It will probably be the same case tomorrow for Brooklyn too. So probably not going to hear him for this episode. So if you're here for Fong, sorry. Probably not going to hear from him. But, you know, we'll see. Maybe I'll give a timestamp of, like, the next game against the Nets. But for the Bulls, he was not here. And unfortunately for him, he missed a pretty good game from the Kings. Well, it's good in that they won. Had they lost this one, it would have been pretty rough. But the Kings beat the Chicago Bulls in Chicago 117-114. The Kings had to overcome a lot of garbage this game. So it was a gritty win. And by gritty, or the reason why it was gritty is because the Kings had to overcome a 16-point early deficit, 19 turnovers, and 13 offensive rebounds by Chicago in order to win this game. And also, on top of all that, the referees. Now, I don't like complaining about the referees, but the Bulls had DeRozan had 2 4-point plays that I thought both were pretty awful calls. So I'll go over the first one. Harrison Barnes contests DeRozan's shot at the 3-point line, and his foot just kind of happens to just like it. So get this, DeRozan is in behind the 3-point line on the jump. And Harrison Barnes the entire time is inside the 3-point line. And because of DeRozan's forward motion, it carries him, you know, forward inside the 3-point line. And Barnes trying to close out, his foot just kind of happens to be there. And it ends up being a flagrant foul. I thought that was a really bad call. Now, I get the spirit of the call. Like, by the book, you cannot have your foot under the guy's landing space. And I don't think DeRozan like kicked out his leg or anything, but like it's just an unfortunate play. And I get you want to protect the guy, but I think the step under flagrant thing is really, really stupid. And they need to add an element of intention to it. Like, if you look at what Bruce Bowen did some unnatural ass shit, like clearly sticking his leg out to make it so other people catch his leg or like land on his leg. Like, even the Zaza one, like, I guess you can call me a Warriors homer on that one. I thought the play on Kawhi wasn't, I don't think he did it on purpose. I'm on that train. And I've seen enough of these fouls to like, just come to the conclusion, at least in my eyes, this is a stupid rule for the most part. Because a lot of the time, when the guy like accidentally like just happens to have his foot in the landing space, it's almost never on purpose. And guys get penalized for it. I think it's stupid. I thought it was a bad call. Sure, like by the letter of law, Harrison was in his landing space, and you know that's a flagrant foul. But I thought it was a stupid foul. And, you know, it gave DeRozan the 4-point play. Luckily, it didn't turn into a 7-point play. It was very close to becoming that. But the Kings survived that. The Kings then get a 6-point lead with, I think, around 40 seconds to go. Levine gets a quick two. And then on the other side, I think the Kings miss a free throw. I think it was Kessler Edwards misses a free throw. But then they come back. And Harrison Barnes is fighting around a screen. He contests the DeRozan 3-pointer. The Bulls are down 4, by the way. Bulls are down 4. DeRozan shoots a 3. Harrison contests. There is like the smallest like touch on the elbow, and it turns into a 4-point play. Mike Brown challenges, and it's upheld. And just, I thought it was a terrible call. Like, I just don't think it's enough contact to throw anybody off. And look, call me a homer for that one, but I thought two awful 4-point plays, and it tied up the game, which then led to the climax of De'Aaron Fox hitting the game-winning three to with a game-winning three, 0.7 seconds left. He steals the ball on the inbounds to win the game. Look, I guess like what comes around goes around. Like they never should have been in position for De'Aaron to hit that shot in the first place. They never should have needed it. But hey, things work out. And you know, this is very reminiscent of the Orlando game. And like they tried to double Fox on that final shot, and they just didn't come fast enough. He pulls up in Ayo Dosunmu's face and nails it. So it's kind of like that shot was a bit of a fuck you to the refs, in my opinion. Just like it was, I just could not get over how bad that 4-point play was. And you know, the Kings end up winning this game. They did just about everything to almost blow it. Like you really wish they wouldn't give their fans a heart attack all the time like this, but it is what it is. They managed to pull it out. A tough, gritty win. They had to overcome a lot of stuff, a lot of self-inflicted wounds as well. Again, 19 turnovers, terrible, giving up 13 rebounds to the Chicago Bulls, or 13 offensive rebounds to the Chicago Bulls. Like they had to overcome a lot, and they were able to do that with some hot shooting from Malik Monk and Kevin Huerter. A rare game where like both of them shoot very well. They didn't score, they didn't like blow, you know, blow the waters, or like they didn't score like a bunch of points. Like they ended up scoring what, 34 points together, which is pretty good. Like they didn't exactly explode, but they hit some big threes in the second half. Like Malik had, I think, three threes in the third quarter alone, and then some really like crazy threes. Or like one or two, it might have been two really big, like crucial threes in the fourth quarter. And like Kevin Huerter essentially had the dagger, one of the daggers to this game, like a nice little sidestep three in the corner to give the Kings, I believe, a 5-point lead. I forgot, but like it was a huge shot. So just an overall great team effort from the Kings, you know, capped off by an incredible night from De'Aaron Fox, like 12 of 17, 4 for 6 from 3. The two he missed, I thought, were like a bit, like he started settling for that 3 a little too much for my liking. But hey, when you can hit the game-winning 3, what am I supposed to say, right? Sabonis got a triple-double, 14 points, 17 rebounds, and 10 assists. Just kind of does what he does, basically. Now has 11 triple-doubles on the year. Apparently moving past Luka Doncic for number two on that list. Number one, Nikola Jokic with 27. Just casual, like, you know, just casual 27 triple doubles, no big deal. Yeah, Sabonis ain't catching him. I don't think I'm crazy for saying that. A really good game from Harrison Barnes. Surprisingly, I'm looking at a stat sheet, 3 for 10 from the field, which was surprising. It felt like he played a lot better than that, but he had 10 free throws this game. He made 9, but I thought he was a really, really good stabilizer for the Kings. Like especially in that second quarter where things were getting out of control, he was the guy that would, you know, go and score a big basket, hit a big three, or you know, attack the basket and draw free throws. Like he was a really good stabilizer this game. And, you know, credit to him. Like, and they also ran some stuff for him to you know, get points. Like, they posted him up to start the game. Like, they're trying to run more stuff for him. And, he had a really good game, despite the really rather deceptive box score, actually. Kessler Edwards got extended run this game. Granted, only 18 minutes, but I thought he was really good on defense, like, taking away DeRozan's space. And, you know, making Zach LaVine work. Zach LaVine actually had a really pretty bad game for the most part. He finished okay. But, so he's just getting extended run, which kind of cuts in. Well, not really this game. That doesn't cut into Keegan Murray's minutes this game because Trey Lyles was out. I'll talk about that in a little bit. But Kessler Edwards, I thought he was really good. He hit 1-3. That his three-pointer is a bit janky, you know, but he plays such good defense. Any kind of offense you get from him is a doozy, is just a cherry on top. Was a minus 22, though, which is really weird. I thought he played well enough, but I guess he was just in during that run in the first half where the Bulls got a 16-point lead. So Malik Monk was a flamethrower this game. He started out kind of slow, but he really heated up in the second half. Again, like, you know, was it 5 of 8 from three, 6 of 10 from the field for 19 points, hit some big threes in the second half. And yeah. Okay. Got one more guy I just got to quickly talk about. Alex Len played this game. Oh man, he's done. Like, he can't get off the ground. He can't really rebound. Doesn't really just like that. His 5 minute stint was just so bad because Trey Lyles was out, and so Metu had to fill in for the four, which was interesting. But like Alex Len, just maybe this is just a one game thing. But my God, he looked done this game. Like, just had no real ability to move, and just couldn't even like get off the ground at all for a rebound or anything. It's not good. I think he's done at this point. Okay, quickly going to the Chicago Bulls. DeRozan had a really good game. Like, he got to a spot. He's going to make some shots. Had those two just terrible four-point plays, I thought. Was 4 for 6 from three. Like, was a sniper for stretches. Like, he retook the lead in the fourth quarter, like, all by himself. But, you know, it just wasn't enough. And, you know, screw those calls that he got. Seriously, those were bad. Vucevic was interesting. 8 for 22. 0 for 7 from 3. I thought he was impactful during the game, but, like, yeah, not as efficient as I thought he was. But, you know, like, he had to battle Sabonis, and Sabonis probably won that battle overall. But, like, I thought Vucevic did his part. Wow, 6 offensive rebounds all by himself. That's crazy. I'm not going to talk about Pat Bev. He didn't really do anything. Zach LaVine, just a weird game for him. He started like 0 for 9, I think, like, or like 1 for 9. He was really rough this game. Just like his touch was a little off. He couldn't really get it going from outside. Did get nine of nine from the free throw line, but just a weird game from him. Patrick Williams was okay, like 3 for 5 from three. Just kind of did his part. I thought he was actually pretty good. I'm surprised they didn't play him more. Interesting that he came off the bench. I think they, because Alex Caruso was out, they put in Ayo Dosunmu, but surprisingly they didn't just go with Patrick Williams. Dosunmu was fine, but like didn't really do much. Okay, last guy I'll talk about, Kobe White. I don't know what it is with him. What was he shooting on the season from three? Because every time he plays the Kings, I swear to God, he shoots like over 50% from three. Let's see. He's shooting 35% from three, and he shot 4 for 6 from three this game. It's just one of those things. He's just one of those guys that loves playing the Kings. And, you know, he almost like did beat the Kings all by himself. Again, 4 for 6 from three, but, you know, we were able to survive it. Man, Bulls shot under 40% this game. That's actually interesting. Thought they shot a lot better, but I guess not. Okay. Anyways, after this win, the Kings are now 20 and 13 away from on the road, and they move to 41 wins on the season. Significant because it means they are guaranteed to finish at least 500 for the rest of the season. How far they've come is just, like, this team, like, it's got a spirit about them. And, like, it's definitely a different team with a revitalized roster, a revitalized culture, a revitalized spirit, a revitalized soul. Like, it's found its soul. And they're finding so much success now that it is just fun just listing out these things. Like, every kind of, like, positive stat you can come up with. Like, you always go back to, oh, this is the first time in 2004 since they've done it, this 2005, 2006. You know, it's great to see that the Kings were able to turn around from what was a drag for much of last season. And, you know, like, if you're not a Kings fan, like, let this give you hope. Like, if the Kings can turn it around, your franchise can turn it around too. And, yeah, they're guaranteed to finish over 500, and they have what? Let's see. So 18, so that what, 14 games to go, I believe? That sounds about right. Yeah, so 68. Yeah, 14 games to go. So yeah, good. Just more positive news coming from the Kings. Yeah, just all the good vibes right now. They face the Brooklyn Nets tomorrow night in Brooklyn, which is that a far flight? Let me see. Chicago to Brooklyn. Let's see, that is a, show me the map. It looks kind of far. It's a 12-hour drive, so give or take, that's about a 3-hour flight. That's rough. I don't know why this is a back-to-back. That's weird how they scheduled this one. Brooklyn's going to be a tough matchup. They have so many wings. I want to see how Sabonis deals with that, because they don't really have a guy for Sabonis. Like, Nick Claxton ain't going to cut it. I assume they're going to swarm the shit out of him, and they're just going to have to go from there. That's going to be a tough team, but the Kings have gotten the team that they needed to get, and we'll see what they can do against the Nets on the second night of a back-to-back. Okay, after a teeny pause, you will hear from me on the other side after the Brooklyn game. Okay, good news. The Kings win. Really kind of, I guess, ugly. I actually like these kinds of games, but you know, you could realistically call it an ugly win, because the Kings beat the Brooklyn Nets 101-96. And you know, to my surprise, and maybe to your surprise, Fong is actually here with me.
Hello.
Yes, you did not hear him on the first half, but he is here for the second half. So first of all, what were your overall thoughts on the game? I'm just gonna hit you with the big hook, or I'm gonna hit you with a big question. How about that?
Yeah, you know, defense, it's okay still. Still gained there. We're lucky that, you know, the Nets didn't shoot, I guess, or hit more like more threes over us, because I was expecting a 3-point shootout because of how many threes felt like they shot in both sides.
Yeah, like in the Bulls game, I didn't mention it earlier, but like the announcers were essentially kind of giving the player shit, because the Kings, you know, to nobody, like everyone knows it at this point, they don't have rim protection. So like, go to the rim against them, stop settling for threes. But the Nets got a lot of actually pretty decent looks, like especially in the second half. In the first half, I thought like the Kings actually defended them pretty well, and then they would just hit some tough ones. Like the Nets started out 4-for-4 from the 3-point line, and I was thinking like, those are pretty well defended. Like there was like one open one, but that's fine with me. But yeah, the Nets could not hit threes. And yeah, the Kings defense looked really good, because they shut off the paint. And, you know, if you're not going to hit your threes, it's going to be a long night for you.
Yeah, pretty much. And another thing that I noticed also is, man, Spencer Dinwiddie with his free throws. I'm pretty sure he's around the 80s in terms of free throws. But man, he missed, what, 5 out of his 8?
So let's see. This year, he's 84, well, almost 85% this season. But yeah, did not have a good stretch of the free throw line. 3-for-8. And unfortunately, because it's such a close game, like those misses loomed large. But granted, the Kings were pretty not great from the free throw line either. De'Aaron 6-for-10. And they shot 75% from the line, 24-for-32. So it kind of evened out. But yeah, surprising that Dinwiddie, I don't think he made 2 free throws in a row the entire game.
Now that you mention it, he missed a lot, which all you could say.
Let's talk about like how the Kings won this game, despite shooting less than 40% and under 32% from three. Sabonis, he absolutely dominated this game. Like I had compliments on how the Nets, they have wings upon wings upon wings, like Dorian Finney-Smith, Mikal Bridges, Cam Thomas. Or no, not Cam Thomas, Cam Johnson. We'll talk about Cam Thomas later. Then Yuta Watanabe. Yusuf Watanabe, Nick Claxton's kind of a wing. Joe Harris is kind of a Royce O'Neal. Like, just wings up on wings up on wings. But they don't have an actual big man. Like, Nick Claxton is the closest thing they have to an actual big man. But he's light. He's skinny. And Sabonis ate his ass alive. Just brutalized guys inside. Just beat them down. They could not contain him all night. They had Royce O'Neal guarding him for stretches. And yeah, like they helped as well as they could, but Sabonis just got inside no problem. And you know, credit to Malik Monk as well. Malik Monk like was just had like perfect chemistry. And yeah, Sabonis just dominated the Nets.
Yeah, and also on the board, 21 rebounds. Dear God. I forgot if this is the season high. I felt like he had another 20-plus rebound game earlier in the season, not going to lie.
I got to look it up. I believe he has two. Him and Giannis are the only ones with, I think, three 2020 games. I think Giannis has two or something. I think either Giannis has three or I'll have to look it up. But yeah. So this is, I believe, his second or third 2020 game. And let me just look up this tweet. Let's see if I can find it right now. So Sabonis has four 2020 games. Giannis has three. So he's leading the league in 2020 games this season. So yeah, just beasting guys in the paint. They absolutely could not stop him. And everyone else has kind of played off of that. Like, you know, De'Aaron was not good shooting the ball this game, but he found like his spots to be effective. But everyone else played off of Sabonis and just hit big shots when they needed it.
Yeah, pretty much the hub of that offense.
Yeah. What else? So unfortunately, some bad news. The Kings did lose Kevin Huerter in the first quarter. It was a pretty bad miss call where, like, he gets a backdoor cut on Mikal Bridges. Mikal Bridges is like kind of like not undercutting him, but like his lower body is like contacting Kevin Huerter's lower body, and he lands very weirdly. Basically, like his leg kind of folds. And preliminary kind of like expectations is that it's a hamstring injury, and they need to do an MRI just to see how severe it is. Reports did say Kevin Huerter's in good spirits. He walked off on his own, so hopefully he's fine.
Yeah, hopefully we don't see anything bad from the MRI, and yeah, speed recovery because playoffs are coming soon.
Yeah. With this win, the Kings get their 41st win of the season, so that guarantees that they will finish the season at or above 500. Hopefully it's above 500. I hope they do not lose every single game from this point. But yeah, what a turnaround from last year. The accomplishments just keep coming. They keep passing these milestones. Like at one point, they couldn't get five games above 500. And then after that, it would took forever for them to get 10 games above 500. They are now 14 games above 500. Let's see if they can make it 15. And let's see, like, so they would have to go. So they have what? Let's see. So they played, let's see. So they've played 72 games. Do you think what do you think their final record? Like, so they have what? So they played, again, fuck me, I can't do the math right. 69 games. 69, Jesus, I can't do math. So they have, what, 13 games left. So they only need to win 8. They need to go 8-5 to reach 50 wins. Do you think they can reach 50 wins?
Yeah, it'll be tough. Let me look at the schedule for the rest of the season real quick. So we have Wizards, Jazz, Celtics, Suns, Jazz, Minnesota, Blazers, Spurs. Naturally, the more I look at the rest of the season, I feel like it's possible.
I like to think it's very doable. Like, the Kings have shown themselves to be a formidable team since the All-Star break. They're what, 9-2, I believe? Like, they've been really good coming out of All-Star break. And there's no reason to believe, like, they're going to trend down anytime soon. Like, all the stuff that they've done, I feel, is very sustainable. And I think, yeah, they're going to finish above 50 wins.
Yeah, I guess we shall see.
And that catapults them, I believe, to the 2 seed. Well, clearly in the 2 seed now, because Memphis didn't play today, right?
No, they did. They
did?
They lost against Miami today.
Yesterday.
Was it? Oh, shoot. I'm looking at yesterday's schedule.
Try to say I'm wrong?
I know.
You're wrong.
Well, they're playing the Spurs tomorrow. I think that's what I remember seeing, too.
Yeah, Desmond Bane got ejected for kind of uppercutting Kevin Love's crotch, basically. I'll be honest, I didn't think it was a flagrant 2. I don't know, the internet disagreed with me. So it is what it is. But yeah, Kings now a half a game above the Memphis Grizzlies, firmly in the second seed. What a time to be alive.
Yes, it is. And let's see if we could stay there, because let's see. They actually, on the NBA.com, they already show a playoff picture showing like, oh, who we maybe potentially will face if this would be the, I guess, the finalized schedule or finalized whatchamacallit standings.
I mean, we'll be facing the Minnesota Timberwolves at this point. So that's actually kind of the tricky part about getting into the second seed. Like, who are we going to prepare for? We actually won't know for a while because they just keep like going up and down. There is a very real possibility we end up facing the Lakers. Now, I don't look forward to that, but that's a juicy like matchup, especially if everyone is healthy.
Yeah, I guess we'll see. So far, I mean, who's really out at the moment? Just LeBron, I'm assuming.
LeBron is out. AD had to sit out last game, but he should be back next game. They did lose to the Rockets, which was okay. So like the standings are a bit weird, but isn't it such a nice thing now to like, you know, to be able to talk about playoffs and talk about matchups? Like I used to do this with the Warriors, but never had a chance to really do it on this podcast. But now we actually get to talk playoffs.
Yeah, that means more games for us, I guess.
Yeah, you get more of us, or at least more of me. We'll see how what your availability is come playoff time, because I think they do start early. So we'll see how that goes. But this win against the Nets, very nice, gritty win. Again, you shoot under 40% and you basically control the game. And like, the defense, you can pick apart like how, you know, whether the defense was good or not. Ultimately, they did a good enough job to like hold off one of the better offenses in the league. Actually, let me just go and check that right now. The Brooklyn Nets are actually pretty far down. Never mind, they're not a good offense. What am I talking about?
Oh, okay.
Well, either way, they held a pretty decent team like below their standard. And they were able to win, some would call an ugly game. I just like close games, competitive games. But yeah, they managed to win without, you know, going to their go-to strategy, which is outscore the other team and not worry about defense. Instead, they played some good defense and they managed to outscore the other team.
Yeah, pretty much. Another thing, you think Keegan Murray will be able to score, let's see, 26 more threes by the end of this season?
So they have 13 more games left. You said 26, right?
Yeah.
Two threes a game for the rest of the season? I think that's doable.
That's very doable. Plus, I mean, by the amount he's shooting, I believe I want to remember seeing what, about 6 attempts a game?
Something. Well, he made three. He shot six. He shot six this game, made three. So 50%, not too bad. Let's see. His average, he averages 6 3-point attempts a game. Exactly six. Wow.
Wow, exactly. Jeez. Well, we'll see if he could be Davion
Donovan Mitchell.
Yeah. The other Mitchell.
Okay. Just quickly talk about some of the players. Sabonis, monster game, 24 points, 21 rebounds, 5 assists. With the 21 rebounds, he moves to the number one, or basically he has the most rebounds in a season for a King at 836. He's surpassed that. That was once Otis Thorpe's record. He has now broken it. Yeah, really good for him.
Yeah. I mean, so quickly too. I mean, he's only been here literally like one whole season, really.
Yeah, about like 1.25 of a season, because he came at the trade deadline, so wasn't here for that long. He only played like 13 games because he got injured.
Mm-hmm.
Like, yeah, he's really showing it. He's breaking all kinds of records. Like this season is just like it's gonna be remembered for the beam and everything, but like there's so many records that have now like I guess been set. And again, like we keep going back to the year, like, 2004. Like, basically, you know, the Kings have finally experienced some success, and he is at the heart of it. Like, now it took a little bit, but like that first game against Minnesota, like his first game, like it was the changing of a guard. It revitalized the franchise. It really did. And now, like, now it's just all come together. And yeah, it's showing in so many ways. Again, just breaking the rebounding record for an entire season.
Yeah, pretty much. I mean, without him, I'm actually pretty surprised at how much we've grown, especially with Sabonis in our lineup, because I remember last year, man, the Haliburton trade, in my opinion, was, I mean, still a little iffy. But after seeing it now, I mean, I'd say it's pretty fair.
Look, don't let people do revisionist history. And I'll hold myself accountable too. I did not like the trade. I was one of the ones that was saying, if you're going to do that for Sabonis, you might as well do it for Ben Simmons. Because like that, Haliburton was the one that was off limits. Like I was even kind of open to the idea of trading Fox. But instead he traded Haliburton for Sabonis. And I'm thinking, oh God, why for Sabonis? Well, this is why, because Monty McNair knows what he's doing is why. like me being the internet nerd is like, oh, how are you going to trade a guy who can pass and shoot and score the way he did, Haliburton does? But like, you know, it's been a win-win trade for both sides. The Kings are in the playoffs. The Indiana Pacers, like, they're probably going to get a good pick. And like their weight, and you know, Haliburton's been so good. He's actually even like given that franchise a little bit of hope. They're a little bit ahead of schedule, so like everything's kind of worked out. I'm just glad, like, you know, that has worked out for everyone, and it's worked out beautifully for the Kings.
Oh yeah.
Just quickly, one more thing about this game. Malik won defensive player of the game. I was surprised. But Mike Brown talked about it. He was in the right spots. Guys try to go at Malik Monk, you know, him being probably the weakest defender out there. But he did his job of angling him a certain way, like not getting roasted on mid-ranges. So credit to him. I for sure thought Sabonis was going to win it, because not only 24 points, 21 rebounds and 5 assists, 4 blocks.
Yeah, I actually don't remember him blocking, not going to lie. I mean, he's just pretty much there being just Sabonis, I guess you could say.
Like, there was some, like, I thought there were steals where, like, it looked like he stripped the guy and not actually blocked them. But, you know, I'm not going to argue with it. Like, he was good. He was really good on defense this game, I thought.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
It also stands out. Mezzi was really bad on defense. Just was an absolute turnstile on that end, which was really weird.
Yeah, I mean, hopefully he'll get there for him, but other than that, I mean, he's just a dunker guy.
Yeah, like he fills in for the minutes that Sabonis needs to sit, and he does his job well enough. I didn't think he hurt the team that much, but yeah, his defense was bad this game. Mm-hmm. Okay, well, after all of that, just quickly go over some news around the league. Ja is now, well, it's been announced that he's serving an 8-game suspension. The 8 games are retroactively applied. So technically he can actually come back after, or he's eligible to come back on the 20th, because they've already missed, I think, 6 game, or he's already missed 6 games. And there's only 2 more games before the 20th. But he's probably not going to be coming back on the 20th, because there's going to be a ramp up period before he comes back.
Yeah. I mean, I actually thought the 8 games would start, you know, when it was announced, which I want to say, was it today or yesterday?
I forget. It was like yesterday, I think.
Yeah, so I thought the 8 games was going to start at that time, but I mean, it'll be pretty nice to see Jaw back, especially with, you know, I mean, Memphis does need Jaw back.
So, like, the thing that I saw a lot of discussion of is that he went to a counseling center in Florida. And he's, you know, give or take, maybe spent about a few days to a week, or like maybe a day to a week. Like, is that enough in your opinion?
I wouldn't want to say so. I don't know. It's tough to say what the quality of his sessions were, but after all the talks and whatchamacallit news that are thrown at him around the league, I'm going to assume that he knows, like, what he needs to do coming for or when he comes back. I mean.
Yeah, I guess this is a conversation for another time. I just wonder what
they actually even do in the counseling sessions. I guess they just maybe told them, like, here, you can't be doing this shit when you're one of the faces of the league. You're an ambassador for Powerade. You just got your new shoe. Like, tighten the fuck up. Mm-hmm. Well, essentially, grow the fuck up, essentially. But hey, I hope he's changed for the better. I hope he doesn't, you know, do more stupid shit. Like, waving the gun stuff, like, that's just stupid. There was no way to ever defend that. And just stop doing that. And also, like, you don't got to go to IG Live. Like, sure, if you want to do that, like, behind the scenes, it's not good, but it's your right. Don't broadcast it onto fucking IG Live. I don't know what he was doing there. That was just stupid.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
Oh, no. You could go ahead.
Oh, I was going to move on to another topic.
Okay, that's fine.
Okay, well, we hope that Ja is back and he keeps playing basketball. Okay. Bogdan Bogdanovic has reached, or he declined his player option for his for next year, and he agreed to a 4-year extension with the Atlanta Hawks, $68 million over 4 years. Thoughts on that number, and, you know, thoughts on the extension as a whole.
I mean, congrats to Bogey, of course. I mean, he deserves all the money because, I mean, former Kings, of course. Let's see, that's about, what, 17 a year for Bogey?
Around there. I mean, if you want to do the math, what is that, four? So that's, what? That's about 14 mil, like 14 and a half mil a year.
Let's see.
It's not, I don't think it's equal for every year. I think, like, it gets more as closer to the end of that contract.
I see. I mean, I haven't seen too much Bogey, you know, because we don't, I personally don't watch the Hawks, but I mean, it's great to see that, you know, he's got the money secured for those 4 years, I guess.
Yeah. I'm, you know, really happy for him to be able to, you know, get the bag. And, you know, I just hope he stays healthy more often, because, like, he's been missing a lot of time. And, but when he plays, he is good, and he's a great complimentary player to, you know, Trae Young and DeJounte Murray and those guys. So, like, I hope he stays healthy. I will say, though, Kevin Huerter, $65 million. Huerter's arguably a better player at this point.
Yeah, I'd say so myself too.
Yeah, Hawks kind of fucked up on that one. Last piece of news. Not that much news the past few days, but I do want to talk about this one. Michael Jordan planning to sell his stake in the Hornets. Do you have the details, or if just, like, I guess we'll just tweet essentially?
No, I do not. But I mean, my first thoughts is, like, I mean, sure. I mean, I thought he would be, you know, a forever majority owner because, you know, North Carolina, I mean, connects with the Hornets, I guess.
Yeah.
I don't know what else.
I guess, but, like, look, there's no way to ever defend how good, like, if he was a good owner at all. He's been horrible. That's been one of the worst franchises in the league basically the entire time he's been there. And he's basically, like, not improved since. He's also apparently a cheap motherfucker, apparently. Like, one of the reasons why Kenny Atkinson didn't take the job was when they hired him, they did not want to hire his assistants. And that's kind of what caused them to kind of, like, renege on their initial agreement. It's been a tumultuous period. He's been a bad owner, and it's one of those things where, like, one of our buddies, he watched The Last Dance, and, you know, talks about Michael Jordan a lot, loves Michael Jordan. It's like, he's a guy that has a desire to be good at anything he wants. There's such a fire within him. Turns out you can't do that with everything. You just can't. And he's, like, his ownership, it's like him being an owner, him being a scout for talent, he's never improved on that. And hopefully he finally, I will say one silver lining, hopefully he finally reconciles with Charles Barkley and he just admits, I'm shit at this.
Yeah, we're never gonna see that. Who are we kidding?
I want to see it. Like, they're like the Isaiah Thomas stuff, like, at a certain point, like, isn't it just exhausting to harbor that hatred, if you will? I know it sounds corny as hell, but, like, it's got to be exhausting at a certain point, right?
don't know. I can't see, in my opinion, Michael changing in that way anytime soon. Maybe if he's a lot much older. I mean, it's still Michael Jordan in his head, and that I can see in, you know, the recent years.
Yeah, I think for now on, instead of calling him Black Jesus, they should call him Black Sasuke, because he harbors that hatred forever. By the way, like, one of the most unfortunate things, like, during that, I guess you want to call it unfortunate, people from The Last Dance learned who Isaiah Thomas was, because Michael Jordan still hates him to this day, because he didn't shake his hand and all the other shit.
Uh-huh.
Do you know who actually shook his hand during, like, you know, when they were about to walk off? There were two people. I forgot who the other guy was. I want to say it was John Sally, but one of the guys was Joe Dumars. Joe Dumars did right by him, and there wasn't I don't think there was a peep in that documentary about how Joe Dumars did right by him. But you know who got the shine? Isaiah Thomas. So the kids who watched, so people who didn't know about Michael Jordan before this, didn't watch that documentary, now know who Isaiah Thomas is, but probably know dick about Joe Dumars, the dude who did right by him. Just a fun little rant I have, because Joe Dumars was with the Kings for a bit. So I just think, like, at a certain point, you harbor that kind of hatred. It's time to put that to rest. And please just forgive Charles Barkley. He was right. So please forgive him.
Yeah. When the day comes and we see that ever happen, it's going to be a momentous day, not going to lie.
He's going to be on TNT, baby.
You know what? I don't think I've ever seen him speak on TV since, I mean, me and rest in peace at Kobe's funeral.
Yeah, like, he's at, like, that's one of the things that I actually do enjoy about MJ. He's been out of the spotlight for the most part. Like, that's what kind of made The Last Dance that special, because he doesn't come out much at all.
Mm-hmm. So, I mean, he's I don't even know how many billions he has. So, I mean, it's MJ. He does what he does.
Yeah, you know, all them Jordans. Like, I'm trying to, I just resold my Jordan white cement for not a huge profit, but, like, I mean, just look at those shoes, how popular they are. And, like, he's been retired for how long?
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. And he's going to get a lot more money by selling his portion of the Hornets.
Go ahead.
Yeah, 2010, bought it for $275 million. Forbes says that is now worth, the Hornets are currently worth $1.7 billion. So, yeah.
Just, not too shabby.
Yeah, I mean, it's still, you know, he's making money off of this no matter what.
And, you know, like, it's going to have the Shaq effect. They're all of a sudden going to start winning for some reason after he sells a stake.
Yeah, we'll see who the majority owner, the new majority owner will do with the Hornets at this point, because, yeah, they're going to need a new fresh out.
Well, they need some defense. And if they're going to get a new owner, they got to make a big splash. You know who they're going to trade for?
Who's that?
Rudy Gobert.
Oh,
right there. It's only right for that to happen, because honestly, they do need some defense. I don't know if Rudy Gobert fixes all of those things, but why the fuck not? Try something different.
I wonder if when Jordan does leave, will they still get Jordan Brand stuff?
Well, is he selling his entire stake or just a part of his stake?
Let's see. It says, according to Yahoo Sports, preparing to sell majority stake. So he's probably going to sell a lot, part of it.
Maybe the whole thing. I mean, I don't know. Like, this seems like they reached an agreement with the entire league, because, like, you know, a lot of, like, jerseys have the Jordan logo on it, which is I thought was really dope.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I remember, I think even before that, I think the Hornets were one of the only organizations that had Jordan stuff, like, in terms of warm-ups and other amenities, I guess.
Yeah, so, but who knows, like, maybe it's an NBA thing more than it is a Jordan thing, but hey, like, you know, it hasn't worked out. It's time for something new. Like, you know, just do the right thing, Mike. Forgive Charles Barkley. Like, I don't even care that he's selling the Hornets. Just forgive Charles Barkley. One of the best people.
Can you imagine Charles bought that majority, or even Isaiah Thomas bought majority?
Oh, Scottie Pippen, like you said, you want to talk about petty? They actually set the name. It's not those people, but
yeah,
like you know, Charles Barkley was trying to get more money out of TNT. Like, gotta put that money somewhere.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know if they'll do any much better. But who knows if they ever do. But like you said,
look, it's not the full. It's not like the cure all to get a new owner. But like having a bad owner is really hard to overcome.
Yeah. Oh yeah.
Especially a cheap one.
Yeah. I don't know. So far from. You know, I mean, we've had our share of ownerships, and I mean, I would say it's not as bad as other guys.
Say what you want about Vivek. He's not a racist, sexist asshole, and he's willing to spend.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
That's all I'll say to defend Vivek. Okay. Anything else you want to talk about?
I don't think so. Let's see. Our next game's Saturday, if I remember correctly, right?
In DC, baby.
DC. And we played them, I think, two more times, if I remember.
No. This is the last time. We played them at home.
Oh, we're playing Utah two more times. That's what I remember.
Yeah, that's gonna be a rough trip because we're going back to Utah, and then and then on the next day we play the Celtics. Yeah.
Really? Oh man.
It's rough.
At home? Yeah, it's at home.
It is at home, but like you're coming back from Utah.
Yeah. Yeah, that's going to be a tiring game. But, you know, you never know. It is an NBA TV game, and so far every I guess you could say nationally broadcast game the Kings won so far. I want to say.
Yeah. I mean, like, you know what? The Kings are doing so well right now. And like with some of these teams kind of scuffling, I think that the Kings are good. There is a universe where they can go undefeated the entire way. Probably it won't happen, but like something close to it even, you know?
Well, we shall see.
All right. Well, thank you guys for listening. We'll catch you guys back after the Wizards game, and hopefully it's off a win.
Yeah. Well, we'll see you guys later.